talk about movies, maybe a joke or two. It's pod on the cob. It's pod on the cob.
Hello, dearest listeners. Thank you for tuning in to Pod on the Cob, your favorite podcast about movies and corn and the wonderful union of the two on the big screen. My name is Stephanie, and I am here with my wonderful co-host, Tyler.
Hail to the man behind the rose, he who walks behind the rose. Can you call me Tyler? Can we not call me Tyler? Can we call me like Malachi or Mordecai? I need like a biblical
name.
Sounding name. Yeah. You know what I mean? Or an M name. Yeah.
An M name. Tyler, this is episode 7 of Pod on the Cob. Can you believe it? It's hard to believe.
It's amazing. It feels like it simultaneously feels like we've done a lot more, and I guess we've done like bonus episodes and stuff, and yet it also feels like we're still little baby infants crawling around in our diapers. We're almost like children.
Oh my god. So Tyler, what movie are we talking about today?
We've been teasing it a little bit here and there, and we've been mentioning that we were eventually going to go back into this franchise. It's the franchise that started it all, going back to our very first episode of Pod on the Cob. Today we are covering 1992's Children of the Corn, Part 2, The Final Sacrifice. Perhaps the least accurate title of a movie in the existence of cinema. Couldn't be more wrong. There's like 15 more of these for us to cover after this one.
Yeah, honestly, it's probably 15.
It is directed by David Price, and it's starring a bunch of big A-list names. Terrence Knox, Paul Scherer,
wow,
Ryan Bowman, and Christy Clark. So just few household names. You know, we all remember the first time we saw Ryan Bowman in something, you know, where we were. Big part of everyone's childhood, you know. So literally I looked up all these actors on Letterboxd, and this is the vast majority of them, this is their biggest movie.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah,
right on. Hey, we watched it all, hour and a half of it.
Yeah. Was it so? Okay, I watched it on Pluto TV.
Good for you.
And it had about 900 commercial breaks, so it felt like it was a 9-hour movie for
me. You know, Tyler, I paid $3.99 to watch this movie of my hard-earned cash, so it was commercial-free, but was it worth it? I don't know.
Maybe that was the final sacrifice.
Yeah, it was the final $3.99 that I had left in my bank account.
All right, David Price, you owe us $4, you bastard.
I'm ready to get that check in the mail, David.
Listen, you know, we've got a lot to talk about with this one, but before we do, you know, why don't you just quickly let people know what's the elevator pitch of what The Final Sacrifice is all about?
Immediately following the horrifying events in Gatlin, Nebraska, the neighboring town of Hemingford generously takes in the surviving children, attracting national media attention. It soon becomes clear that he who walks between the rows isn't confined to the borders of Gatlin. With a new leader appointed, the cult of children take up their homicidal ways once again. Death, horror, journalism, racist stereotypes, and awkward teen romance abound. You may even find yourself asking, will this really be the final sacrifice?
All of that is true. It's like so, like the racist stereotypes, the awkward teen romance. Okay, so I did look it up. The over-sexualized young female lead in this, she's over 18. So at the very least, we don't have to talk about horrible exploitation of a minor, which is what I thought we were going to be talking about during this. But still, I mean,
oof.
Without giving anything away, this is a piece of work. There is both a lot to talk about with this and almost nothing to talk about with this. It's essentially Children of the Corn all over again with shockingly even less interesting characters, with one big exception, which we'll talk about later on. And yet at the same time, it has a lot of things that aren't in Children of the Corn that I really wished were in Children of the Corn. So obviously we're going to recap this entire thing. We're going to talk about it scene by scene. There's going to be a lot of things I'm just going to be kind of glazing over, like, because there's not a whole lot to say about it. But before we do, we usually like to talk about, like, our history with the movie before we, you know, dive in. Mm-hmm. Like, but it's a little different this time around because I have my history with this. Everyone has seen unfold on this podcast. Mm-hmm. I have no history with this sequel. I haven't seen any of the Children of the Corn sequels. And you all have basically joined me in my journey of watching these movies.
Yeah, I think, and I'll share for myself, but I feel like somewhat comfortable speaking for Tyler a little bit too when I say, like, what you're hearing slash maybe watching is like a beautiful blooming flower of our discovery of Children of the Corn, and all that it entails. Every
I'm
sequel,
glad you're speaking for me on this. I'm really
you're welcome. Every sequel, every remake, every short story that we didn't read, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. but it's if you haven't heard the episode one of Pod on the Cob, which is the first Children of the Corn, and you haven't really heard us say that, like, this kind of sparked our inspiration to start a podcast. We've always loved talking about movies and kind of just, like, getting into, I don't know, weird tangents and nitty-gritty stuff that interests us. And I don't know, it was like, the thing that we thought was funny was, like, yeah. Corn and movies. And what better movie slash franchise to latch onto than Children of the Corn, I guess.
I guess I'll just add and say that in my mind, even if everyone stops listening to this, even if the podcast kind of loses steam, even if you and I get too busy, I have every intention of reviewing every Children of the Corn movie, right?
And, yeah.
And to me, the job won't be done until we've recorded an episode for every Children of the Corn. And that's why we are, just for people who are wondering, because we've had people reach out to us and they're like, well, just do the whole series. Like, just do all of them, you know? And I'm like, my answer to that is, like, we're purposefully spacing this out because we really like doing this podcast. And I'll be sad the day that we're out of Children of the Corn movies to review, even if my opinion of them may waver. I still can't wait to cover them all, you know? So
absolutely.
Yeah.
Should we jump right in? Children of the Corn 2, the final sacrifice?
It certainly is the final sacrifice, right? yeah, let's jump right in. Because right off the bat, our podcast is well represented. It's corn in the first second of the movie, which I just
was your heart warmed?
Yeah, I love when the first note in my notebook is corn. That makes
gosh,
me so
too.
Happy.
Me too.
Yeah, wonderful. Yeah, immediate. My first note, I always like my first bullet point. I think I'm going to start reading my first bullet point verbatim from now on because it's always that first thing you feel. So my first bullet point I wrote for the story was immediate corn, immediate poor production quality.
Okay, so on that note, you want to hear my first bullet point?
Yes.
Open to weird cornfield animation slash images and credits, and cornfield was underlined, so
that's good. Yeah, and that's also accurate. It's like a Sergio Leone movie starting with the weird, like, cutouts of the corn.
Yeah, I was like, are these pictures? Is this art? Like, what am I seeing? What am I witnessing?
One of the running jokes of the first episode, for those of you who haven't listened to it or haven't heard it for a long time, was Stephanie constantly wondering, was this in theaters? Was this a TV movie? This one was in theaters. So is the first one. And again, it's just shocking that this played.
Wait, I'm actually shocked. I didn't even think to look it up because I literally just assumed that.
Look it up.
Oh, my God. Okay. Well, wow.
This is the last one until 2023.
That was in theaters.
That was in theaters.
Okay, that's crazy. So the first one must have been enough of a success that they're like, let's put the sequel out there.
I've got some numbers on that. So the first one, it made a really good profit, actually.
Okay.
So it made around 15 million box office off a budget of anywhere between 800,000 and 3 million. I know it's a huge gap, but I've seen sources that cite both of those numbers. This made a lot less than
wow.
that.
Oh my yeah. God.
And it was made for, again, a pretty variable number, but basically around the same amount-ish.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. Okay, so fade to not scary farm maze.
Man walking down into a basement. Just the light of his, like, flashlight. So just the flashlight beam kind of scanning this dark basement. And he sees a bunch of dead bodies. Just, like, a series of dead bodies. And do they have corn on them?
I wrote a note in this. I wrote a note in my notebook that says there's corn in every single scene of this movie.
Okay,
so I'm going to assume there's corn in there because I literally think corn is in every scene of this movie.
Beautiful. We love this. It cuts right to like this news segment, which, I mean, I'm just gonna say it was actually my favorite part of the whole movie. This like news segment. It's kind of like the actual footage of you know, they're recording for the news, so it's showing. It's showing him, the reporter, telling the story, but then it's also like, it's not, when it's cut, it's not like cut. It's just showing the behind the scenes or whatever. And I thought that was pretty fun. I sent, just before we started recording, I sent Tyler like a sticker. You know, you can do like the stickers on iPhone. And I like took a screenshot of a clip from this news scene. And it was like the best quote. How did I not write the quote down? It was something like,
I have it written down. Okay, I wrote it down last night when we were watching it.
Okay, what is it?
What is this shit about the corn?
What is this shit about the corn? Yeah.
Yeah.
Love
and
it.
And then, of course, the kids are, they're kind of showing, in the news footage, they're showing the kids who committed all the murders from the first movie. And they keep saying, I saw the corn. I saw the corn.
They saw the corn. They're in line for a bus or getting off the bus.
I think they're getting into a bus.
Yeah, they're getting into the bus. So the news segment is set in Gatlin, and all the kids, there's no grownups because obviously they were all murdered. And all the kids are getting bussed over to the neighboring town, which I definitely remember is called Hemmingford. Mm-hmm. And they're being bussed right over to Hemmingford. And basically the next scene is Hemmingford, right?
Yeah, and I'll be honest, I'm embarrassed at how confused I was during this movie, because I was already like a little confused of like, are they in Gatlin still? Are they in a new place? And like, why are they adopting? Because what we find out is that the residents of Hemmingford adopt the murderous children of Gatlin.
Yes. Yeah.
Because that's how it works. That's how the law works, you know.
Yeah, of course.
So they're adopting these kids, and we're kind of learning all of this through news footage, but it's a little disorienting.
It is.
Yeah, the intro of this is super disorienting because they're showing you three separate things at once. They're showing you news footage. Mm-hmm. It's also focusing on these two reporter characters, these two guys that are doing this like news footage. And then there's also the fact that like all the things that are actually happening in Hemmingford. And then they also are showing the two sweatiest humans on the planet driving a car to Hemmingford. Our main character and his son are driving to Hemmingford, and they're just sweating. They're really just beads of sweat on their foreheads.
Like, in all definitions of like saying they're sweating, like they're sweating. Yeah. There is strife between these two. Mm-hmm. They tell us a lot in the first like several, honestly, like the first 5 minutes of the movie, you learn a lot. And basically this dad is like left, this kid was born to like teenage parents, and the dad left because he was like, I was 17. I didn't know anything. And the kid is like super like bitter about it. And there's just like a lot of strife, and they're just like butting heads about everything.
And the reason we know that this is happening, just to give the viewers a little bit, you know, a little context, is because the dialogue is things like, you left when I was young. Yeah, I did. I had to follow my dreams. But because you followed my dreams, I didn't have a dad. That's right. When a dad isn't around, you don't have a dad. Like, they're literally just like saying things to each other as if they are, as if they have the scripts on their laps. Mm-hmm. Like, it's so, these are our two main characters, by the way. Yes. So we are in, it kicks off a continuing trend in the Children of the Corn film franchise of unlikable protagonists in cars driving and arguing,
which we can respect some continuity here, right?
You know? I love it. It's consistent at least.
So we back in town in Hemmingford, we find out that like not all the townspeople really agree on the best way to kind of handle this situation. There's this old lady in particular who kind of, she makes a scene and she really doesn't want these kids in her town.
I wonder why. I can't imagine why.
She won't accept them into her home. Turns out her husband walked into the cornfield and never came out. So
15 years ago.
Yeah. So he was killed like by the corn.
I guess they never, literally, they never ever tell you. So it doesn't even matter. Also, sticking with our disorienting footage, then some of these plot lines start to like come together.
Yep.
Where like our main character, Sweaty Dad, we find out that he's a journalist. He's like a tabloid journalist.
Yes.
And he knows the reporters that are doing the footage in Hemmingford. And they like make fun of him. They like know who he is. Like they make fun of him and say that he's a hack.
Yeah.
And then they drive away, and he ends up in Hemmingford and starts meeting like the citizens of Hemmingford.
Yeah.
Specifically, I don't know anyone's names in this. That is going to be a big problem for the review. But he specifically meets the owner of a bed and breakfast with a horrible bowl cut, and her newly adopted her mushroom head, and her newly adopted Children of the Corn son, Micah, who she's taking in, and he's going to go stay at there. He's immediately like, ooh, I'm going to investigate this story of the murderous children, and I'm going to stay at this hot lady's bed and breakfast.
Of course. Because what else would you do?
Exactly. And then, so this kicks off, for me, one of the big problems with the movie, which is the horrible clash of tones and pacing. Because while he's like casually sort of talking to people in the town and talking to the woman who owns the bed and breakfast, we're also getting a parallel scene that it keeps snapping to.
I love
of
this
the two, me too, of the two lost reporters getting like attacked by, literally attacked by the cornfield, which is amazing.
The corn.
It's amazing.
They like just got through insulting the Sweaty Dad, who his name is John, but like whatever. Sweaty Dad makes more sense. And they were driving, and there's nothing but cornfields, right? This is the Midwest that Tyler and I have never been to. Just kidding. We've both been there.
Turns out, we found out. We've both been there.
And they're like, we got to get a shot of this corn. So they pull over to kind of get some shots. I don't know, film people. I forget what those shots are called, where you're like setting the scene or whatever.
Establishing shots.
Look at you and your knowledge.
Look at me.
So they get out of the van and they're like, we got to get these shots of the corn. And yeah, like Tyler said, they literally just get murdered by the corn, which is like kind of rad.
It's really rad. And I'm not critiquing that because that was amazing. What I'm critiquing is it continuously snapping back to casual things happening as this is happening. It makes this feel like, it makes the scene feel like a comedy. It makes it feel like you're watching like Naked Gun or like Airplane or something. You don't feel like you're watching a horror movie because it's like, la-da-da-da-da, we're in Hemmingford talking to the lady with the sexy, you know, bed and breakfast shirt
T-shirt,
on. T-shirt, like,
yeah.
And then it's like a guy's throat getting slit by a cord
by
leaf.
Cord.
And like,
I know.
And it's just like, oh my God, what emotion am I supposed to be feeling right now? I'm so uncomfortable.
I also want to kind of call out something that references back to episode one as well, that I was extremely pleased to see brought back for part two of the movie, which was the corn POV shots. Tyler, what did you think?
Yes, yes. these are almost even, maybe these are better, the POV
better
shots, because they're awesome.
And because your qualm with them in the past was that you know who's watching and it's the kids.
Right.
But this
right.
time.
I didn't know.
Is it the corn?
See, so of course you assume it's going to be he who walks behind the rose, right? But we don't know. We don't know if it's really going to be he who walks behind the rose. And for those of you who don't know who that is, he who walks behind the rose is like the, in the first movie, the like supernatural villain that all the kids are worshiping, right? Ostensibly, that creature was destroyed in the first movie. Was it really destroyed? I honestly don't know the answer to that, even after watching this movie. I think the answer is no, but I guess we'll find out as we keep doing the synopsis. But the POV shots are cool. They're like very 90s, very like 90s, like they look like an old video game or something. They're great.
Or like an old music video or something.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like really oversaturated black, white, and red color graded like thermal looking footage or something. It's cool. And then a guy gets a corn stalk through the chest and dies, one of the reporters, and it's great.
Yeah, it really is. And then, but don't worry, we flash back, or we flash over right back to sweaty dad and kid, John and Danny Garrett.
Yeah, yeah. Danny's a very 1990s kid main character name, Danny.
Yes, and they get in a fight, you know, wah, wah, it's so sad. Danny's like, I've had it. I'm leaving. I don't care. We're in the middle of nowhere. I'm going to go find the nearest bus stop. I'm going to wait for the like soonest bus and I'm just going to get out of town.
And then a pair of boobs drive up on a scooter.
A pair of boobs and like a super, super long head of hair.
And listen, I'm not making fun of this girl. I'm not making fun of this actress. She's fine. But they get that I'm making that joke is at the expense of the people who made this movie, not at her. She is super over sexualized and has nothing else going on. Like she is devoid of character.
In my notes, I wrote mega babe rolls up on a motorbike.
Yep. Yep. That's about right.
They meet at the bus stop. She basically tells the kid like, hey, there's no buses coming. And obviously he's infatuated.
Yes.
So, easy. That was written in the stars.
Did you think it was funny how active the area around Gatlin is in this movie versus how like barren and empty it was in the first one, where it's like there's nothing around Gatlin at all? And in this one, like Hemingford is like kids riding around on scooters and like a whole like bustling community. And like it's weird to me that the people in Hemingford haven't been like aware of what's going on in Gatlin this whole time.
I know. It's like, guys, it's just a cornfield separating you two. You're not that far away.
This movie connects really poorly to the first one in almost every way other than like the very basics.
Yeah. And even then it's like, okay, because there's children and there's corn.
Pretty much. Yeah. 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 That's totally fair.
Again, we've been kind of talking about how things are like kind of confusing. Like I was confused too through a lot of this. No, and I was like fully trying to be like, okay, I'm following, and then I'd be like, what? So this next
we're gonna
scene,
get some stuff later on that for me I was like, I'm still confused about, and I read the Wikipedia, so I can't wait to get there.
Okay, well, like there's like corn dimensions in the next scene, and we kind of like cross like dimensions. So this kid is running into the cornfields looking for the other, like, cult followers.
It's Micah. It's the one that was adopted by the bed and breakfast.
It's Micah, and I mean, he's, like, looking for Isaac or any other followers, right?
Yeah. He looks like Elliot Smith.
From the other movie. And he, like, falls, or he gets attacked. Uh-huh. And then there's, like, corn electricity on his body. Mm-hmm. And then he starts falling endlessly into, like, what I can only assume is like just interdimensional space.
Yeah. Or screensaver. Like a screensaver from a computer from the 90s. Yeah,
okay. So one in the same. Screensaver and interdimensional space.
Micah, the angsty kid, he gets attacked by something. It's the same POV shot we saw that attacked the reporters. And then we go to a scene of some of the kids, the children, are gathering in the cornfield, and they're talking about like what their next steps are going to be, whether or not they need to keep following the words of Isaac, the antagonist from the first movie, you know, what their new purpose is going to be. They're feeling kind of lost. And then Micah comes out of the cornfield and he's like different. Like his eyes are looking, his eyes are a little different.
He's all confident.
Yeah, he's obviously possessed. He's obviously been possessed by something. He's not himself, although we've had no time to really get to know this character anyways. And he comes out and basically in so many words, we're going to go back to killing adults again. Like the movie, that's the plot. He basically says, the plot of this movie is going to be, we're going to kill adults.
And corn. So we can all breathe easy because there's going to be plenty of corn.
Thank God.
Yeah, so Micah catches up to Danny, right, the reporter's kid, and kind of like, I don't know how to put it, he kind of is like adults suck, right? Like you're having problems with your dad, like you're a kid, like people turn 18 or he's like people turn 19 and they just think they know everything or whatever, trying to kind of persuade him, I guess, into joining the cult. Like,
yeah, I think so. He's trying to evangelize Danny into joining the Children of the Corn cult.
Yeah. So the dad of Danny, whose name is John.
he's a journalist
and he's continuing to investigate the story. So he's kind of looking for his next big break.
He
like sort of got kicked out of like some good job he had, and now he's like writing for tabloids, but like he wants to be like a legitimate journalist. So he goes and he's looking into this story, right?
He's really invested. He decides to go talk to the old lady that you mentioned at the start, whose husband died 15 years ago. Mm-hmm. And she's trying to move her house. She's trying to leave the town. She's going to take her house with her. So her house is like elevated. It's like on jacks, right?
Yes.
Or whatever you would call those.
Yes.
And she's being harassed by the local Children of the Corn harassing her. They very rudely put a cross on her house. They drew a cross out of what looks like shit. I think we find out what it is later on, but it looks like poop. But it's not. And, you know, our main character has this knack for showing up right when things are always happening. Like, he's always in the right place at the exact right time. Mm-hmm. So, of course, he shows up in time to sort of see this argument go down. And he touches the poop cross that's on her wall and rubs it on his pants. And that's important for later on, even though it's not important at all.
No.
But they make a point to show that he rubs it on his pants.
Okay.
And then the scene just kind of awkwardly ends.
But I do love that this lady's got her house up on, like you said, jacks. Like she's going to, her goal is to literally just leave the city or leave the town with the house just fully intact. Like she wants to put it on the back of a truck bed or whatever and wheel it out of town. And like she keeps getting surrounded by these like cult members, these kids, and they're kind of like, the way that they appear and show themselves is they kind of look like they're trying to like, they're like a cringy like high school band, like trying to
it looks like a bad album cover.
Yes. And they're all like lined up kind of like with their height, and they're kind of just standing like staring, and there's like six of them. It's like a perfectly even number. It's really funny.
It's super funny. And then spoiler alert, in a couple of scenes, she's going to die. So, but you can tell the director was like, oh shit, you can't just like show her being confronted by these guys and then the next scene be her dying. Like, we can't do that. So they shove in a really awkward scene where the dad is like, to his son, John, to Danny, is like, you're a kid, you should be exploring this town and getting to know people. So go explore this town. And then the way that Danny decides to take his dad up on that offer is he like creepily watches the girl that he saw on the scooter bathe in like the local,
in
like
a waterfall,
in a waterfall on the side of the road. And the water's like brown and gross.
And she's
and
just like,
and he just watches her.
She's just like, it's in so a bikini. Weird. She's like washing her hair in this waterfall. I'm like,
she's in a bikini top. And denim jean shorts. It's insane.
Denim shorts.
And then she's like, "What are you watching, stud?" And like invites him to like.
Yeah, and he's like, "You never seen a girl before." He's like, I've seen a girl before. I'm like, okay, so I don't believe you that you've seen a girl before.
His eyes pop out of his head. He starts hitting himself over the head with a hammer and going like, aruga, aruga. And it's a whole great scene. And then they transition to a great scene. The first scene in the movie that I genuinely liked, where I was like, oh, other than the corn killing the people, which I love.
Yeah.
But I'll let you talk about it because I can tell you're excited.
Yes, I am excited because it was, just as you put it, kind of haphazard and random. She lost her cat. So, like, all the hubbub is over. The reporter leaves. The kids are gone. She's back in her house, and she's like, oh, where's my cat? I'm like, cat, kitty, where are you, kitty? Doing the whole thing, going outside, looking for the kitty, whistling. The kitty's under the house because the house is elevated now. There's this big crawl space under there. So she's crawling under there looking for her cat, and she's, like, grabbing the cat. All the while, she's hearing sounds and looking around and seeing, like, the legs of the kids. The kids are up to something no good, and she's in a very vulnerable position being under this house that's, like, on jacks, right?
Yeah, yeah. Even though a light breeze could kill this woman, she's in an extra precarious situation than normal.
And I love... Okay, something she says, and it's like said a lot throughout the movie, and she calls these kids dirty little bastards.
Yeah,
she's like, you dirty little bastards, and that's like an insult that's hurled at these kids a lot throughout the movie, which I thought was really funny. Like, dirty little bastards or crazy bastards.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm sure listeners, you can tell where this is going. The kids let out all the jacks, and this poor old lady looking for her cat gets completely crushed by her home.
And I wrote down in here, she says before she dies, she yells, what a world, what a world. And I was like, whoa, that's so weird, because there are so many weird things that come back to Wizard of Oz for us on this podcast.
Yes, well, I wrote, you know, much like the Wicked Witch of the East.
Well, right? And then later on, we meet her sister, and her sister, they call her Miss West.
Yeah, okay, well, man.
So it's like a straight up weird,
I love that,
Wizard of Oz Easter egg in this movie.
Yeah, because
it's so weird.
She gets crushed, and it literally shows it, like, just her two legs are sticking out from the house.
Even though they wouldn't be,
because
she,
like,
was like in the center,
like,
of the house,
of the
for
house.
Sure. Yeah, definitely she was not.
She had like
house.
Socks and shoes on, and it just was like squish.
It's just an homage, a blatant, you know, a great homage to the Wizard of Oz. And then again, going with the weird tonal shifts of this movie, now it's back to romance time between Danny and the girl's name's Lacey. I'll start saying her name. Her name's Lacey. And they're like, their romance is like incredibly hollow and unbelievable. And they're immediately in love. And also the audio is so bad in this scene. You can tell that, like, it was windy outside, or the river was louder than they thought it was going to be. So they, like, they overdubbed all the audio. So it's just like their mouths are moving. It doesn't match up. And they're just like, oh, Danny, I'm so glad that you're here in Huntingworth. My parents are dead.
Yeah.
Because
so we find out. Well, and we find out in this scene that she was from Gatlin. So originally she's from the town that took place, or all the murders took place with the kids, but she just happened to leave before all that happened.
Yeah.
And her parents are dead, but they were not murdered by the kids. They died in a car accident.
And I know what you're thinking. How is this going to come back to matter later on in the movie? And I'll just spoil this for you right now. None of it matters. She could have parents. And it wouldn't change the movie at all. She doesn't need to be an orphan. It's so
weird. She needs to be an orphan so she's free to leave with Danny at the end of the movie, Tyler.
That's true. That's true, because she does literally ask
Danny,
"Don't
you know
will you
anything
take me
about
to
romance?
New York City with me when you leave?"
Yeah.
Even though she just met him, she asks this in this scene.
She wants to leave.
And then we're in church all of a sudden.
We're in church. Oh, boy, did we miss being in church.
Oh, boy, did we. These kids move fast. The Children of the Corn go to church. And okay, listen, there's one thing that we've alluded to this, but I want to just kind of say it more definitively now. One of the things I hate about the first Children of the Corn is that all the kills are super boring. People just get stabbed, or like they get hit with a sickle. It's all very dull.
Mm-hmm.
I got to give this movie some credit. The kills are really fun.
Yes.
We've already talked about two really fun ones.
Uh-huh.
And the fun kills just continue. And this one defies all, like, logic and understanding of what's even possible in the Children of the Corn universe. Like, it doesn't even make sense what happens in this scene. It's crazy.
I feel like the writer of this movie had a bunch of random ideas in, like, a hat. And just pulled them out and was kind of like, I'll put that in. Or was like rolling a dice with like a bunch of different like ways that people can die. Like mythological ideas. Like
weird
magic.
Government conspiracies. Because we go to conspiracies later on about, you know, like and mythology and prophecies and all these other things that come up later on. Also, I'm going to agree with you, but I'm going to add one detail to your theory. I think somebody put a bunch of ideas in a hat and they knew what the ideas were going to like mean and translate to. And then somebody else, it was like a game of like someone else picked the things out of the hat and had to guess what they thought the things were supposed to mean. And what I mean by that is like this scene, somebody gets killed with a fucking voodoo doll. I'm just going to go ahead and say it. We'll talk more about it in a second, but the guy in church gets killed with a voodoo doll. And I've seen like voodoo dolls in the past that are like made of like corn husks. Like, that's, like, a thing. Like, dolls, like, creepy dolls that are made of corn husks. But it's not. It's just, like, a wooden doll. And I swear to God, when the person wrote that down, they were like, yeah, it's going to be, like, one of those corn husk dolls. You know, like, whoever directs this movie will know what I mean.
Right, because it's Children of the Corn.
Totally. And everything else in the fucking movie is made of corn. And then it's, like, the director was like, I don't know, just get, like, a piece of wood, make it look like a guy, and that's the voodoo doll. Like, it's, like, just doesn't even connect in any way. And, like, why do the kids have voodoo powers? I don't know.
It's such a funny scene because the reverend or whatever who's giving the sermon, his sermon is like so fire and brimstone-y, and the kids are like sitting in the back row, and it's Micah, the leader of the cult, holding onto this wooden doll, like you said, with like a carving knife. Right. And I don't did we know who the guy who was murdered was?
I have no idea who this guy is they kill.
Yeah, the background.
They choose him out of everyone in the church.
Yeah. And like for a very gruesome death, he starts carving away at this doll, at this like figure's like head and ear. And this guy's sitting in church listening to this sermon and he starts like coughing or like sneezing or like blood is just running out of like his face. And it's such a bloody death.
It's crazy.
And he just like dies and causes this whole commotion.
And it's to the point where by the end of the scene, I'm sorry for those of you who are listening to this and not watching the video, but it's to the point where you can obviously he has like tubes in his sleeves that are shooting blood out and he's holding them to his face and you can just see blood. The blood is coming out of his face, out of his sleeves onto his face so hard that it's like going up like a ramp up his cheeks and like flying off his face.
Yeah, it's very
outrageous.
Bloody. Yeah.
And it's so funny. And I was laughing hysterically during
this
entire
scene. I was dying
too.
I was dying.
And then that guy just dies. And the church is so ambivalent to this. They don't even react until he's basically about to like die. Like they don't react at all. It's so weird. And so then he dies. And I don't know who he is or why he died.
No.
And then we're at a school. Because this movie just is like never going to rest. So now we're at school.
I'm so happy we went. It's back to the school in Gatlin.
Mm-hmm. Back to the school in Gatlin.
Corn is everywhere. Corn is pouring out of the doorways, out of the lockers. It's all over the floor. Any type of thing or surface or place you could put corn and corn stalks, there was corn.
This is also where we meet the best character in the movie for me. I love this guy so much. He unfortunately is the butt end of a lot of racist jokes, but the actor is incredible.
Yeah.
And the character is actually interesting. Dr. Frank Redbear, who is a Native American professor who lives in the area. And he's just like this cool, chill dude. He's like super relaxed and calm. And he basically just like exposition dumps in the like most casual way ever some important details to our main character, the journalist man, about what was going on at Gatlin, and like we learn information that we don't need to learn because we already know this, but it helps the main character kind of learn what's going on a little bit, right?
Yeah. And he's just like kind of rad. But yeah, like Tyler said, there's a lot of like racial stereotypes with him being a Native American. that it's just like you can't help but kind of roll your eyes at those.
But the character, but the actor does a great job, and the character is actually cool. It's a bummer that he's misused in this, but he's genuinely like the most interesting character I think we've seen in a Children of the Corn movie, aside from like Isaac or something maybe. Like,
right.
He actually has like character. He's actually interesting, mm-hmm. you know?
That's true.
So like, then the dad learns some valuable information from him, and then he also sees that the stuff he rubbed on his pants earlier, remember the shit cross I was uh-huh, talking about?
Uh-huh.
They added some ADR dialogue of like completely different audio of him saying like, it put a hole in my jeans, because it ate a hole through his jeans.
Wow.
Well, I guess we'll find out why later on. It like doesn't matter at all. But yeah, we kind of find out why later on. Also, again, because of the jarring nature of how this movie's made, the next scene also features the dad again in a completely different place. And he's yelling at his son, Danny, for doing literally exactly what he asked him to do, which is walk around the town and get to know people. He gets mad at him.
Yeah, doesn't want him hanging out with those kids, right? The kids of that town.
Yeah, which is like, why'd you send him out into the town then, dude? Well, he's a kid. What do you think he's going to go do in the town other than try to hang out with other kids? And this also leads me to, in a movie that's just rife with general plot inconsistencies, here's one that really drove me nuts. The dad is treating this situation like, murders are happening in this town. Who could be doing them? And it's like, there's no conspiracy here. If you take a busload
who
of
could be doing
serial
them?
killers, and you put them in a town, and then people start getting serial killed, I'm gonna guess it's the dozen murdering children that you've injected. Let me ask you this: have murders been happening in this town for a long time? Did they just start happening? Well, if they just started happening, maybe it's the fucking murderer kids that you put into the town. There's no conspiracy here.
But, you know, it would take some hard-hitting journalism to really uncover that scoop, you know?
I genuinely think that they caught this when they were making it, and they were like, oh, shit, there's no conspiracy here. It's going to be exactly what everyone thinks it is, because eventually, later on, they do, I'm like a little spoiler for later on, they add a conspiracy, like, for no reason that doesn't line up with the movie at all, and it's almost like they're like, this guy's useless if he doesn't uncover something, so let's just have him uncover, I don't know, this random thing we made up from the top of our heads. And we'll get there. We'll get there. But it's so, like, dumb. It's like, and it just, like, you can just tell it's so, like, everything in this movie was such an afterthought. Like nothing was really planned out at all.
Yes. That's how lazy. It feels.
Very lazy.
Lazy and wandering. Yeah.
Right.
Okay, well, this kind of leads us into the next death, which I also kind of loved.
Same here, but before the death even happens, the dad is a third scene in a row, and the dad is in a new location all of a sudden again, and that's how this gets set up. But go ahead from there.
Well, no, I was gonna say at this point in my notes, everybody, I just wrote I made popcorn, so I made popcorn, and I just was kind of like, yeah, I'll just let some of this happen, and then I'll.
It's completely fair. So he goes to the coroner's office where they're doing an autopsy of who cares? Someone who died.
Of the guy who died in the church.
Okay.
Right? Yeah. So it's like, how could he have died?
And the reporters. And the reporters they found in the cornfield, I think, are there too.
Oh, so they're doing an autopsy. So all the dead bodies.
And the coroner's, and the guy's like shaking down the coroner for like no reason. The main character's shaking him down. And the coroner's acting really shady. So then he shakes him down even more.
He's acting shifty for sure. With good reason,
because
after the reporter leaves, turns out the town, so like the sheriff, the reverend, the coroner, etc., they're all in on this conspiracy to cover up these murders, cover up the killing, kind of brush it all under the rug in an effort to like make money. Right?
We'll get to it, but essentially
we don't know yet.
All we know is that there is a cover-up happening in Hemmingford. But the fact that there's a cover-up happening in Hemmingford has nothing to do with this guy dying, to be clear.
I mean, they're mad at him.
The kids don't have anything to do with the cover-up, which we learn later on. They just kill him because the movie needs somebody to die next.
They're just culty.
The way they kill him is great, though.
Okay, the way they kill him is probably anyone who has, like, a fear of needles' worst nightmare.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
He gets surrounded by these kids. Again, they appear as, like, a cringy, like, weird band. And they have syringes, and they just, like, stab him over and over again.
Yeah.
The series of syringes. I think the final blow is, like, a knife, right?
They get him with a knife at the end.
Yeah, at the very end. But they really put in the work with the needles.
And then a girl with a creepy doll puts a lollipop in his mouth and they leave him to die on the floor. This, you know, I will say this for this movie. You know, the first one, we accused the first one of being absolutely not scary at all. And this one's also not scary at all. But this is the scariest scene, I think, between the two movies.
Yeah, I think some of the deaths were kind of, like scary. I don't know. Bloody and horrific, you know.
And then, no joke, the literal next thing that happens is John goes back to the bed and breakfast and just has sex with the owner of the bed and breakfast. And it's so sweaty. It's like they just poured them with a garden hose before they started having sex. It is bizarre how sweaty they are. Like, I was worried about them. Like, I was worried that they were going to get dehydrated.
You know, it must be really hot in Nebraska. You know, we wouldn't know. We've never been there.
So the movie, I did a little research. The movie was filmed in North Carolina, and that makes a lot of sense when you think about how humid it is there and how different it is from the Midwest and stuff. If that awkward sex wasn't enough for us, the basic like next thing that happens is there's like a weird random scene where Danny kind of like goes into the cornfields and sort of implies that he's going to join the Children of the Corn. But then the very next scene also has Danny in it. And it's like him on a date with Lacey. And like, then they start making out in the cornfields with each other. And it looks like they're about to have sweaty sex, but they don't have sweaty sex.
Yeah. Good thing. Good thing. And all of this leads to a discovery.
Well, there's two discoveries. They find bodies in the cornfield. These two lovers find bodies in the cornfield. Is that the discovery you were going to say?
Oh, dang. I loved that. I loved. They were, oh man, it was so classic. They were like making out on top of each other. And then somebody jumps and they're like, oh, like, what is that? And then like he pulls out whatever it was like under her back or whatever. And it's a hand,
hand.
A cut off hand.
Right.
And they throw it and like scream. Oh man, that was good.
That was great. So that's the first discovery. And then the second discovery is the big conspiracy that we've been alluding to this whole time, which is Dr. Frank Redbear and John uncover that last year's harvest of corn has toxins in it, and they've been mixing it in with the corn they've been selling, and they've been selling it to the public. And guess what? The corn, the toxin in it, that might be the reason why the kids are getting violent and murderous.
Oh my God. It might cause madness. It might cause hysteria. It might cause violence.
Okay, this is the stupidest subplot ever. Because we know, you and I, we know about the entity living in the cornfield. We've seen the first movie, and we've seen that Micah is clearly possessed, not by drugs.
Through dimensions.
Totally. So it's the stupidest subplot ever. This isn't why the kids are killing people. And we know that as the viewers. It's so odd they shoved this into the movie. It doesn't end up paying off at all. And it doesn't tie back to anything. It's also just like factually incorrect. Like, that's not what's happening here. They are possessed by an evil spirit. It's weird. It's weird that they did this.
Maybe we are all poisoned by this ergot. Whatever, and like
maybe
it's true all along.
Maybe the toxin on the corn, by the way, is the acidic stuff that he put on his pants that ate through his pants, and it was the thing. It was the cross they're putting on the lady's house. That's the tie-in.
And it's like a mold, and it's ergot. It's like what they say, or what people theorize, like, during the Salem witch trials, they think, like, mm-hmm. the wheat had that, and that's what made people think, like, all these people were witches and whatever. Right.
If there weren't overt supernatural things in this movie, it would be a fun route to go down, that maybe they're all just, like, hallucinating this. But because we know that there's, like, an actual, like, magic happening, I felt like all of this was pointless. Like it's a fun idea, but it doesn't really fit the movie to me.
And then those psychic abilities, those magic abilities, are immediately, like, we're thrown into them right away, right after this mm-hmm. scene. When we see the kids again back in town.
Yeah.
They're, like, on Main Street in town. And they're walking behind an old lady. Is she the sister of the woman who was crushed?
Yes. Okay. Miss West.
I think didn't even make that connection, which is kind of funny. They're walking behind her, and she's in a chair, in, like, a power chair.
Like, electric-powered wheelchair or something.
Yeah. And somehow they, like, hack into her chair. And so they have the power. I think it's Micah, right? It's not all of them. But yeah, Micah has, like, the power to control her chair. And, you know, like I said, they're on Main Street. They're by a busy road. And the way that they're showing us this is happening is they're showing, like, it literally happened. But then they're showing across the street. We have this different view of the scene. And it's a game of bingo. And they're playing by, like, these big windows. And through the window across the street is the kids and the lady in the wheelchair. And they're playing bingo. Oh, my God. So the chair goes rogue, right?
Yeah.
But not really goes rogue. It's Micah.
Right. Yeah.
And he controls the chair to go right into the street, right in front of a big truck, semi-truck. Right. And it crashes into her. And she flies through the window of the bingo game in her chair.
Yeah, through this, like, thick-ass pane glass window that's, like, out front of the storefront.
Dude, and they totally missed, like, the writing in this could have been way better. They totally missed the line, like, somebody had won the bingo round and, like, stood up to start, like, saying bingo and didn't say bingo. They said something else, something dumb. The lady crashes through the window. The whole accident happens. Then somebody stands up and goes, bingo? I'm like, no, guys, no. That's not how you're supposed to do
it. What is this movie, dude? What is this movie? I will say, if there's one scene you should go on YouTube and look up, you should look up this lady getting hit by the truck and flying through the window. It's the funniest fucking thing I've ever seen in my life. It was my favorite part of the... I was laughing. I was howling when this happened. It was so funny. I wanted them to show her get hit by the truck so bad, and then they did, and then they just topped it by having her go through the window. It was like I was watching Jackass. I was laughing so hard. It was amazing. Oh my God.
It was pretty good. If there isn't already, like, a compilation of the deaths from this movie on YouTube, like, there really should be, because the deaths are very funny, are very laughable.
Then we go back to the conspiracy plot line. The sheriff of the town is in on it. He catches our main character, John, and Dr. Red Bear, kind of, you know, snooping around the evidence, and he ties them up, and he's gonna run them over with a tractor. And even though the tractor is, like, or whatever, like, whatever it is.
Columbine or something.
Yeah. And even though it's, like, 50 yards away from them, and he could just drive it over them and kill them, or just shoot them, another option. Instead, what he does is he just puts, like, a corn stalk into the gas pedal so that it'll drive itself, and then he just leaves.
Because there's no way this corn could go wrong.
I know, corn is literally involved in everything in this movie. But it's like, so then, of course, they just get away. Don't die.
But it's so funny because it's totally, like, the very last second they happen to roll away. They're trying to do this move where they're like tied up back to back and they're trying to, like, stand up and they cannot get it. And they're just like, okay, like, roll towards me. And they roll like three times and they're safe. So they're fine. They survive.
They survive. And so then you're kind of like, well, okay, what interesting thing are they going to do with this conspiracy now? Like, what's going to happen now? Like, you've got to, I'm sure they'll do something really, no, the kids just lock all the adults in the house and burn the house down in the next scene and all those conspiracy people die and the, and that plot line just ends.
Yeah.
So it was there for 5 minutes.
Yeah.
It didn't contribute because anything.
The kids had to like outscare the conspiracy theory.
Yeah. That's essentially what happens is like, even though these things aren't really tied, like to the characters themselves, like the kids don't know about the corn being tainted. Or okay, that's not necessarily true. We kind of find out that he who walks behind the rose is maybe trying to get like retribution for the fact that they've like tainted the corn. So there is like some connection there, but it's really weak. It's really weak. All the conspiracy people just die. The house gets burned down. They all die inside the house. That's what happens next.
They die, and then we kind of again. Tyler said this is like just the exact same movie of as Children of the Corn. So naturally, our like main adult like character woman is kidnapped by the kids.
Yes, the and one who goes to the bed and breakfast.
They're gonna sacrifice her.
And Lacey also gets kidnapped.
Yes. Okay. Well, obviously, both the ladies have to get
they both get
taken.
Kidnapped. There's chanting and torches and they're in the cornfield, all the kids, and they're saying, "We are one. We are one." Because I think they're trying to make like Gatlin and Hemingford the same place or I don't know. Yeah. It's very reminiscent of the first movie, like you were just saying.
Yes. Yeah. And Danny is there.
Yeah.
Danny shows up. And it's like, is he going to save them? Is he not going to save them?
Right.
The ladies. And because
Lacey, as he's holding the machete over her to maybe kill her, she says, "I love you."
She loves him.
They've known each other for like a grand total. If we had to add up the hours they've known each other, it's probably 2.5.
I was going to say like a generous 12 hours, maybe.
I don't think so.
Yeah, well, of course, she loves him. And Danny does an incredible move with his machete. He raises it as if he's gonna, you know, cut into Lacey, but really he slices the ropes that bind her wrists, and thus begins their great escape from this cult.
It's also facilitated by a rescue mission from the biggest homie on the planet, Dr. Frank Redbear, who drives the tractor into the cornfield area and just starts like trying to like just starts trying to like hit kids with the tractor.
Yeah, he's like, "I'm gonna run you fucking over, get out of the way." Yeah.
And John jumps off of it and full body tackles a kid, which is great. Knocks him down.
Okay, but then something happened that really bugged me, and suddenly a kid has a bow and arrow.
Made of corn.
And he's he kneels down and he like gets his shot and shoots Dr. Redbear like in the gut.
Yeah, it sucks. And he slumps over and you're like, "Is he dead?" And then you're like, "Actually, I don't need to ask this. Of course he's not gonna be dead. Of course he's gonna save the day at the end, but it's okay. I'll suspend my disbelief for a second here."
And then we see again that like sandbag under the dirt practical effect that we love from the first movie
of
he who walks behind the rose like coming for them.
Yeah. And they're running. All of our main characters are trying to get away and the cornfield is like endless now, which I really like. That's a good, nice Stephen King kind of scary thing. All of a sudden the cornfield is like infinitely large. So they can't get out. They keep ending up back in the center and they're going to die. Micah's acting his little heart out. He is screaming at the top of his lungs. He is getting light. He's like getting covered with lightning all of a sudden. Like he's becoming this supernatural thing.
Dude, he turns into like a devil. It's like so creepy.
I wrote down he turns into a Halloween mask.
Yeah. And or then, like a vampire from Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Like
Yes.
Yes.
And then Red Bear wakes up and is like, "Not on my fucking watch, kid." And he runs over. Hold on. It's genuinely this funny to me. He runs over Micah with the tractor or with the like, it's like a thresher. It's not a tractor. It's like a thresher. And as Micah's getting pulled into it, he like kind of stops being a bad guy for a second and he's like, oh wait, save me, and like, and then he just gets sucked in, and then they just have like hamburger meat come flying out of the vent of the thresher. It's the, it is so funny, dude. It is like the funniest shit ever.
Yeah, and I think what it was showing was like the he who walks behind the row, like Rose, like leaving his body. So he was like unpossessed in his final moments of death, which is like really sad.
Super sad and fucked up. Like super sad and fucked up.
And then, yeah, it's just like this little spout, and it's just like, yeah, it's really gross. It's really gross.
And as a result of that, the cornfield lights on fire, just like the first movie.
Gotta finish with a bang.
Yeah, yeah, and the fire probably, I think what they're trying to imply is that it, maybe it killed the he who walks behind the rose. It didn't work last time, so I sort of doubt it worked this time.
No, yeah.
But, and then it's like, then they, then this movie, dude, then four people who barely know Frank Redbear burn his body. You know, I'm sure he didn't want his family members or friends or loved ones or close, you know, close people in his life to be there for a funeral. They just burn his body for him because he dies. He succumbs to his wounds rather. And that's like, and then like, like they just drive away. Then they just drive away, you know, into the sunset.
The like two couples. So the father, son, and then they're like, girlfriends, I guess,
right,
decide they're gonna get out of Dodge and go back to New York.
And there's one more scene, and it
there is.
It is so such a bummer that they added this to the end.
It's a huge bummer.
It's such a bummer. They have like Frank Redbear in the woods making like a painting on a rock of like them driving into the distance, wearing like, it looks like the clothes that you would buy if you were like a racist frat boy and you wanted to be like a quote unquote Indian for Halloween. It's like the outfit you would buy. It's like, so like, I don't know. Maybe, you know what? Maybe there's some significance to it. And maybe I'm the one who's looking at it the wrong way. But to me, it was just like, they just kind of make his character just like a cliched.
No, it was a total stereotype, like trope. Yeah. It wasn't. Yeah, this is the early 90s. Like, they're not they're not like respecting indigenous cultures.
Not at all.
By any means.
And he, before he fades away, literal fades into nature, he says the final line of the movie, which I'm hoping you wrote down because I forgot to.
Oh, you know I did.
What's the final line of the movie?
This signifies that the spirit will part the corn and let through one who finds the truth within himself.
What does that have to do with anything that's happened in this movie?
I had to replay it like 7 times because I'm like, wait, huh? Wait, how did that go again? This signifies that the spirit will part the corn and let through the one who finds the truth within himself.
I don't even know what that means or how that has anything to do with this.
No, but we can
that's
never
Children
know.
Of the Corn 2, everyone. Yeah. If you were wondering, that's the movie. We saved that's you a lot of trouble on this one. Let's talk about our feelings about Children of the Corn 2. We've been kind of implying them throughout as always, but let's get into the real meat of it. Steph, what were your thoughts on, what was your impression of Children of the Corn 2?
Oh boy. I mean, it was hilarious. There were literally moments where I was just like cackling out loud because it was just so funny.
Yes.
But like, because it was terrible, the writing was lazy, it was sloppy, it was haphazard, it was not good.
No. Yeah. It won me over. By the end, it won me over. Once the death started happening really steadily, it kind of won me over and I was sort of having fun. But I still don't think, similar to the first one, that it really, for me, is a so bad it's good, like, rewatch it and laugh with your friends movie.
Yeah, I'm the same.
I think it was a worse movie than the first one in as far as like technical filmmaking goes. I think it was worse than the first one. I think I like it more than the first one because it's a little bit more fun.
Yeah.
I think I wrote in my notes, it's a step in the right direction, but it's still it's a very small step in the right direction. It's still not quite the what I want these to become. I'm hoping by the time we are reviewing Children of the Corn 12, they are pure schlock and it's just wall-to-wall laughs. But so far, it's a little too dull and a little too uninspired to really be so bad it's good for me.
Yeah, totally.
So what are the let's do our three things we liked about it, three things we didn't like about it. You go ahead and start. What are the three things about it you liked?
I liked the sweet, beautiful corn that comforted me from start to finish.
From wonderful use of corn.
I like that, and this was something I liked about the first movie. They stuck to that kind of vibe of like creepy kids choir singing in like the background and the soundtrack, which I think is fun and kind of, you know, adds to the horror, if you will, of murderous children.
Yeah. Although I will add that when there's not a choir in the music is not very good.
It's terrible. Yeah. I know. Maybe the budget. And then I liked the killings, the deaths were were pretty funny.
They were on, that's on my list too. One of mine was the killings, so that's a good segue, I guess, into mine. Like the killings, you know, in this movie, one of the things we critiqued the first one for was there's no originality or creativity to the killings. It's kids in rural, you know, Nebraska killing people. There's so much you could do with that. And this movie had a lot of fun. It used the setting really well, and it used the fact that they're kids really well. Like, I liked that the little lollipop with the guy dying, it's like a little kid did it. Like, that's scary, and the house being dropped on the lady, and the corn killing people. The kills were much more appropriate for the kind of movie I was watching than in the first one. So I agree. That was one of my top three. Literally, I devoted an entire one of my three good things to the old lady getting hit by the truck and flying through the window. It was amazing. I wish that was, if the movie was 90 minutes of just that happening over and over again, that would have been enough.
You would have loved it.
I'm going to give my last bonus point here to my main man, Dr. Frank Redbear, who is this actor is saddled with this kind of racist stereotype character and, you know, decides to just play it straight, play it really well. Mad kudos to the actor for actually like elevating this character out of a bad, you know, what the director clearly wanted him to be, which is like this like negative stereotype. And instead, like giving him a little bit of, you know, like he's kind of cool, he's kind of charming, good character. So I'm gonna give a full point just to that guy.
Yeah, and I kind of liked to, on that note, like, I don't think we mentioned, he's like a doctor of anthropology at the local university. And like, all the townspeople are like openly racist towards him, like the sheriff and that whole encounter. They were like, oh, you're so woo-woo or whatever. And he's like, dude, like, I'm a man of like science, like, fuck off. So yeah, that was
He's
fun.
Great. He's cool. And it's like, despite their best efforts, I still liked him. You know what I mean?
Well, and that nicely segues me into one of the things I didn't like about the movie, which was that racial stereotype of Native Americans. Yeah. It's
too
just
bad.
Like
too bad.
Punching down. Like, it's just, it's lame. It's totally not cool.
Yeah, I completely agree.
And was totally unnecessary in this movie. Like,
I agree.
You've been saying it was pointless. Like, they already had a weird conspiracy. They already had the murderous children with the culty thing. Like, they didn't need that, like, mysticism, like, stereotype thing that, they didn't need that.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Good on the guy for doing the best he could with what they gave him, but kind of gross and unnecessary. No pushback from me on that. What about your other two bad things?
Yeah, and then I've mentioned it a bunch before. I think like the story itself was really bad.
Yes, terrible.
Everything was so wandering and just kind of felt random, and like it was like they had to have it all. Like, they had to have the romance. They had to have the intrigue. They had to have the suspense. They had to have the horror. They had to have it. And it's like, you got to pick your lane and just like stay there, because this is not working for me.
No, it's all over the place, man. It's all over the place. I agree. Yeah.
What about you? What were yours?
Mine are similar. Like, I just didn't like, mine could all be one, honestly. Cause like, I didn't like this. I didn't like that corn, the poison corn subplot. I didn't like the pacing and the editing and the frenetic nature of the movie. And I didn't, and I also thought it was pretty boring until it wasn't anymore.
Yeah. I know. It was
so
boring.
So boring until the schlock started and then it was great and I was happy.
But boring until the lady gets hit by a semi-truck and thrown through the window.
I was literally like white-knuckling how excited I was from that point forward. But yeah, you know, just, I agree. Like really, really, like this, it's just needlessly confusing, needlessly derivative. Just like there's nothing to this. It's like, I didn't hate it. I didn't love it. I didn't like it. I was won over by the end, like I said. Like, I liked it more than I thought I was going to by the end, but, like, I will never see this again.
Yeah. So we laughed. We were bored. Some of us made popcorn in the middle of it and missed some of it, but that was okay.
Yeah. And people seem to have a similar reaction to this as we do. So I did, you know, my typical thing. I did a little research on, like, what was the reaction to this. And let me pull my notes up here. I saved some things. Sorry. I should have had this open and ready to go. So the general consensus of it was it got generally negative reviews. And this was made like 8 years after the first one. You know, like 1992 versus 1984. It's a long time since. It's a tall order to think that people would be interested in this, you know, 8 years later, right? Mm-hmm. And it seems like that was the case. The general consensus from people was that it's uninspired, it's predictable, definitely predictable, really easy to know what's going to happen. Lots of plot holes and logic issues, wasn't very scary, the performances weren't good. That was like a lot of the feedback I was reading online. However, there are a contingency of people who do see this as a so bad it's good movie and are kind of into it. So it's, this has a 30% on Rotten Tomatoes. The last one had 38%. So that feels about right to me, if I'm being honest.
That does feel right.
But here at Pod and the Cob, we don't care what people think about the movie. We don't care if the movie's good, bad, whatever. The only thing we care about, I don't know how many times I have to say this to you listeners, how many times I have to remind you that the only thing we care about is how well the corn was utilized in the movie. And we do that with our Cobb rating, which is a 1 through 5 scale, 5 being corn bursting from the seams and 1 being barely any corn in it. So Stephanie. Yes.
This is a very prestigious rating.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. System. This is like an Oscar. It's like getting an Oscar. Yeah. Yeah. So Steph, I ask of you, what Cobb rating did you give to Children of the Corn Part 2, The Final Sacrifice?
Well, I gave it the only thing that any reasonable Pod on the Cob host could give this movie, a 5 out of 5 Cobs.
It's just 5 out of 5. There's no other way to say it. It's 5 out of 5. This movie might have more corn than the first one. That's how crazy the use of corn in this is. They use corn to shove down gas pedals on cars so they'll drive without somebody in the driver's seat. They use corn as bow and arrows, spears, knives. It's in
corn is just sentient and like murders a couple of people too.
It literally murders people. It's in every scene. This movie, I said it during Children of the Corn Part 1. I'll say it again here for part 2. I do not know how we will top this as far as a 5 out of 5 corn film can be.
Yeah.
It might not have been the best movie ever, but it certainly was the corniest
that we've watched.
Yeah.
You know, watch Children of the Corn 2, The Final Sacrifice, or don't. It just is totally up to you. We just gave you the full rundown. We couldn't be happier to be doing this. We want to keep doing it. If you want to support the show, you can rate us on any podcasting platform you're listening on. Give us those 5 stars. You can share us with your friends, your family. Just engage with us on social media. We love you and we love this.
Yep. Couldn't say it better myself. So I guess I'll just say keep cobbing on.
Bye.